comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful, beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It is the show where you matter. Are you subscribed to our free weekly newsletter? If you're not, be sure you do. Look, it's free. It takes a few seconds to subscribe. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to, no strings attached. Just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, look for the link that says K-Files. Really hard to find that link. You'll have to look long and hard. It's the largest one on the page, right in the middle of the screen. Once in a while, I get a surprising email. I got an email just a couple of days ago, yesterday or the day before, from someone who says, I'm a longtime listener to your show, but is it no longer possible to listen to the latest show? Well, and I don't say this in any way scolding this listener. We're glad to have every listener, but, you know, that changed, January? About January, it changed. Yes, you can listen to the latest show, or you can watch the latest show by becoming a member. You can listen live absolutely free, but you can listen to the latest show by becoming a member. 23 cents a day. And look, you know, there are people out there who say, I'm not going to pay nothing for nothing. Okay. Understood. And that's fine. You can listen to the live shows free. But for 23 cents a day, you know what you're missing by keeping 23 cents a day in your pocket? You're not doing that. What you're doing is blowing it on something else. But here's what you're missing. You're missing the forums. And our moderator in the forums is Curtis Eicherman, an excellent, excellent writer and scientific mind. He's the moderator. You're missing chat. You're missing having your own profile page, your own friends page, your own blog. You're missing being able to publish your own articles. You're missing the video galaxy, the free library, the archives, which is our, we call it K-Pods, you're missing that, and a whole bunch of other stuff. You're not getting to see the show, but for 23 cents a day, you get to watch the show. And, you know, if you were a member, then you would get to see the photographs that I'm going to be showing tonight. How about that? So it's 23 cents a day. If you skip going to the gourmet coffee shop one day, one gourmet cup of coffee, that will more than pay for your membership at the Kevin Smith Show. One day for the whole month. Imagine that. And that pays for way, way more than 23 cents of value. So join us. Why not do it right now? We'll be back right after this.
Come on.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Tonight is going to be Open Line Live, and it is a BYOT night. That means bring your own topic. When I open the telephone lines in just a moment, we'll be glad to talk about whatever is on your mind within our genre, all right? Couple of things, though. I brought something to the table that I want to toss out there for you to think about just a little bit. But one thing. Look, I got... before we get to that, I got... two different emails. I didn't get a lot. I got two different emails in response to me cutting a caller off when the caller used profanity. Now, we had two in 1 week. And everyone who listens to this show knows the rule. I didn't make this rule, folks. There's a little tiny little agency here in the United States called the FCC. And you see, we are on AM stations and FM stations and shortwave. And they have laws, rules, regulations, FCC regulations that they fall under. And the FCC has a list of words you cannot say on the air. And you're saying, well, I thought you had freedom of speech in the United States. Oh, well, bad thought. We don't. And the FCC not only has these rules, they have these fines. And the fines run as high as $350,000 per word per station that it was aired on. So, you know, there were people saying, well, you know, I thought that the caller's sentiment was right. And, you know, when you cut him off like that, you know, that made me scared to call in. Well, look, you need to be scared to call in if you can't control your mouth. But let me ask you something. Would you call Rush Limbaugh's show and do that? No, you wouldn't. Would you call Coast to Coast and do that on Coast to Coast? No, you wouldn't. So, on the one hand, it's not because it makes me angry, and that's why I push the button. It's because you just broke a law. I have to control that. On the other hand, if you have such a low view of my show that you can't control your language, then, you know, we can live without the call. I want you to call. Be civilized when you do, okay? I want you to call. And when people say, well, that makes me scared, so I'm not going to call. Oh, please grow up. All right, there is a film called Iron Sky, which premieres next month, already creating waves in Germany. It has reignited debate in Germany about Hitler's development of flying saucers for the purpose of attacking London and New York. It's a sci-fi film, but it centers on the real-life SS officer by the name Hans Kammler, who is said to have made a significant breakthrough in anti-gravity experiments towards the end of World War II. And according to this film, now remember it's a sci-fi film, according to the film, there was a secret base built in the Antarctic by the Nazis, and the first Nazi spaceships were launched in late 1945, to found the military base Swarzy Sun, Black Sun, on the dark side of the moon. Now that's, I want to see this film. This sounds like a real good sci-fi plot. But it is based on, part of it is based on reality. And that is a real life SS officer who actually existed by the name of Hans Kammler. And he is said to have, as they say, made significant breakthroughs in anti-gravity experiments towards the end of World War II. What's interesting about this, Hitler did order the Luftwaffe chief, Hermann Göring, to develop the super weapon that would change the war. And there is a magazine in Germany called the PM, and it reported on this and quoted eyewitnesses who believe they saw a flying saucer marked with the Iron Cross of the German military flying low over the Thames River in 1944. And according to that article, the Americans also treated the existence of these weapons seriously. It was, they believed that the Germans could use it to drop nuclear weapons on New York. And at the time, the New York Times had even written about a mysterious flying disc and published photos of the device seen traveling at extremely high speeds over the high-rise buildings in New York. They estimated that the speed was about 2,000 kilometers per hour. By my estimation, that would be about 1,200 miles per hour. We know that at the end of World War II, the United States recovered some of the high tech German devices. We know that the U.S., and I'm going to show you a picture of one, the U.S. Recovered blueprints, and there's reason, I think, to assume that the Soviet Union recovered a lot of this stuff too. Now, why am I bringing this up? Well, I'm bringing it up because here on this show, I've had guests on that have talked about, and in particular, Joseph Farrell, who have talked about the idea that the Nazis really didn't go out of business at the end of World War II. They didn't surrender. Germany surrendered, but the Nazis, who were in control of Germany, did not sign the surrender. And so his theory and his book about this, a couple of books about it, his theory is that there is something called, he calls it Nazi International. And when we do those shows, it's highly interesting. But when we do those shows, I get emails from people who say, oh, this is nonsense, and, you know, there's no such thing as the Nazis anymore, and blah, 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 blah. All right, now, he talks about, Joseph Farrell talks about Project Paperclip. And when we talked about that on the show, it was somewhat amazing to me, really amazing to me, actually, that we talked about Project Paperclip, which was a very real project that was run, I believe, by the CIA, would have been the OSS, I guess, at the time, which became the CIA. But anyway, they brought all these Nazi scientists over to the United States. And some of these people were high-ranking Nazis. For instance, Wernher von Braun. He was a major in the SS. And he was the face of NASA. When I was a kid growing up, he was the face of NASA. And it's because of him and his team of scientists that we developed the rockets that were necessary for us to do the space program that we've done up till now. Wernher von Braun. He was a major, folks, a major in Hitler's SS. So what amazes me is that we talk about this, and then I get email from people saying that that's nonsense, we would never have brought Nazis over here, and so forth. And we did. Project Paperclip is absolutely documented. We did do it. And there is reason to assume the Soviets did something similar, bringing Nazi scientists to the Soviet Union. All right, now, just this week, you may have noticed in the headlines that a report, a 600-page report, which is an investigation report done by the Department of Justice here in the United States of America. This 600-page report documents the CIA providing safe haven for thousands of Nazis. That's not including paperclip. In other words, we already knew about paperclip. We already knew about Project Paperclip. But this report documents that the CIA brought thousands of Nazis to the United States and gave them safe haven after World War II. And it was an investigation that was done by the Department of Justice on this issue of, you know, Nazis and where are they and where did they go and what are they doing and what are they doing today and so forth. And the Department of Justice, the guy that did this report, he conducted the investigation and then he did this report. I can't think of his name now, but he wanted it to be published. And it was decided at the Department of Justice that they would not make it public. And they've been keeping it a secret. He finally passed away, but he told some people about the existence of the report. And so through a chain of events, a process, freedom of information requests were made. And finally, although the Department of Justice fought this for 4 years. They fought it for 4 years. They finally had to release this report, but it was excessively redacted. That means, as you know, this was page after page after page where everything was just marked out with a marker, or where a lot of stuff was marked out with a marker, a black marker. The New York Times somehow was able to get a hold of a copy of that report that was not redacted. They got the whole thing. And so they've been publishing reports about it. And what this documents pretty much is pretty much in line with what Dr. Joseph Farrell has written and what he has said on this show. Now, we all know that the Nazis had really advanced stuff. Now, it's speculated that they developed these flying saucers. It is speculated, and there's pretty good reason to think that actually happened. For instance, blueprints that were found and so forth. We, as far as I know, we did not recover any of those flying discs. Maybe we did. And I'm going to show you a reason why I say maybe we did. For those who are watching on our TV channel, you are now taking a look at an aircraft that Hitler had built. Actually, that is rebuilt. All right? It's called the Horton 229. And this what you're looking at is a recreation. This recreation is a full-size recreation. It flies. It was done by Northrop Grumman based on original Nazi blueprints. And are you ready for this? The only surviving Horton 229, which has been locked away in a U.S. facility for more than 50 years. So that means that the United States actually has in its possession a real original Horton 229. That's what that means. So did they actually build flying discs? Well, I don't know. But what and did we recover any? I don't know. But I think we have reason to at least speculate that the Nazis did build the flying disc because we did find some of the blueprints. I think we have reason then to suspect we may have one of their or more of their flying discs locked away somewhere secretly, like we have a real Horton 229 locked away. Now, that's a very, very, that's World War II, folks. What you're looking at looks very, very much like America's B-2 bomber. The tail of the B-2 is different. Instead of just one spike, one tail, it has three. But the Horton, if you put those three on the Horton, you've got it. That's it. And, you know, it's an amazing aircraft, the B-2. The B-2 bomber is absolutely an awe-inspiring, amazing aircraft. It is what they call the stealth bomber. And there are people who would say, well, you know, we had great scientists that worked on this, and it's all an American design. But for those who are watching, I've just shown you proof it's not an American design. It was designed by the Nazis. Now, the American scientists quite obviously would have made updates in systems, and they would have made some modifications here and there. But the basic concept, the basic idea, the basic shape and design of our B-2 stealth bomber was something that was conceived of by Hitler's minions. And they actually built some of them, and America actually has one of them built by the Nazis, and they have it locked away in a facility. And when Northrop Grumman decided that they were going to reconstruct the Horton 229, what did they do? Well, they used the blueprints from the Nazis, original blueprints, and they used the actual Horton 229 as a guide as they built this recreated. It's not just a reproduction. It's not a model. That's the full-size thing. And those who are looking at our screen here, you're looking at the TV channel, you know, what you can do is you can look up there in that door, that big doorway, and you can see people standing up there, so you can judge for yourself the size of this thing. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back. So, did the Nazis have advanced weapons? Well, I would say yes. And the question is, well, why didn't they use them then? And the reason is those weapons didn't go online. They weren't developed in time. They didn't go online in time for them to use them against the Allied forces. Had they been able to get them online and operational in time, we might be looking at a very, very different world today. We would be looking at a very different world today. Even if the Allies had somehow won, it would have been at a much greater cost than what we actually experienced. So, I've provided you with information, and I've provided you with visual proof that the Nazis had, you know, some of this super technology that we tout and we say, boy, you know, the American technology is really out there. It is. And the interesting thing is the Nazi technology was out there almost where our technology is today. So then that begs the question, doesn't it? Are those rumors about the Nazis having built a flying saucer, a flying disc, are those, and did they successfully fly it, are those rumors true? Well, they are rumors, and there's no way to know for sure that they are true, except this. Since we can look at the Horton 229 and compare the Horton 229 with the B-2 stealth bomber, and since we can see that it's quite obvious that the inspiration for the concept of the B-2 comes from this very advanced, sleek Nazi airplane, the Horton 229, since we can see that, and since we now know that the American government, the American military, has had a Horton 229 locked away in a secret facility for over 50 years. And we know that because Northrop Grumman used that actual Horton 229 to guide them in their building of a Horton 229, a recreated Horton 229, a functional Horton 229. And since they did that, and we know that the American military has had that Horton 229 locked away, then, you know, we can sort of visualize and speculate that maybe they also have one of these flying discs locked away. Maybe. You know, when NATO was bombing Yugoslavia, the B-2 bombers were used. And somehow, someone in Yugoslavia shot one down with a missile. And it was pretty big news. You may remember this. In the Yugoslavian newspapers, in the Tanjug, I believe it was Tanjug news, there was a cartoon. And even though it was an American plane, and even though I shouldn't find this humorous, it really was humorous, this cartoon shows a crashed B-2 all crumbled up on the ground. Crashed, destroyed on the ground. It shows a Yugoslavian guy with a shoulder-mounted or shoulder-held rocket launcher, and he's saying, "Sorry, I didn't know you were invisible." Of course, it was not funny that the craft was shot down, or that I don't know if the pilot survived or not. But it certainly was not humorous from that standpoint, from that point of view. But the caption was humorous. "Sorry, I didn't know you were invisible." This technology is something that Hitler certainly was working on. It's something that Hitler built. Information is that these Horton 229s that I've been talking about and that I've shown on our TV channel, information is that there were 15 prototypes built. They weren't ready to deploy them yet, but there were 15 of these aircraft already built. We have one of them. Apparently, we have it today. So what about these flying discs? On the screen, people who are watching are seeing the Hanabu. And that's what it was called, the Hanabu. That is an artist's conception of the Hanabu in flight. And actually in this photograph, there are two of them. There's one off in the distance over there and one up close. And there are witnesses, eyewitnesses, who saw a craft like what's in this picture. It's a flying disc. It's got the German Iron Cross painted on it. And or the Nazi Iron Cross. And there are eyewitnesses that saw this fly over the Thames River in 1944. There are witnesses that saw it fly over New York. And the New York Times did a report on it with photographs. And they said it was moving at about 2,000 kilometers per hour, which would be approximately 1,200 miles per hour. Now, that's moving, especially for back then. So I just thought I would bring that to you, that, you know, we're, as we all think about disclosure, and, you know, we always talk about we want to see disclosure happening, the fact is there are a lot of facts that need to be disclosed, and they are beginning to come to the surface. And this whole thing about the CIA taking several thousand Nazis under their wing and giving them safe haven in the United States of America, this report that came out, this is a United States government report. It's from the Department of Justice. And it's the New York Times, once again, reporting on it. But you add all this together, and, you know, you begin to see that maybe what, at least some of what Joseph Farrell has conjectured may be accurate. It may be that many of the flying discs, at least, that people see might be Nazi. They may be Nazi built. So then that begs another question, doesn't it? That begs the question of, did they really build a base in Antarctica? And if they built this base in Antarctica, is it still there? And then we come to all that information about Operation High Jump. Now, Operation High Jump was ordered by Dwight David Eisenhower when he was president. It was the largest naval operation that had ever been done, not in wartime. In other words, it was a non-wartime naval operation. It was the biggest one ever done. And listen, they had a special vehicle built for this operation. And it was for the purpose of being able to track out across the frozen surface of Antarctica. This vehicle could house, I believe it was a crew of six people. It had sleeping quarters. It had a galley. That's a kitchen. It had a little room for them to, I guess you could say a recreation room, not really that, but kind of a living room. It was self-contained, it was heated and lighted, and it ran on tracks. This thing was so huge that when they took it through New York City, I think it was New York City, but when they took it through the city to put it on a ship, they had to take down power lines, they had to close down streets, and it was a big deal. There are pictures of it being moved through the city and taken out to be put on the ship. Operation High Jump was supposed to last 6 months. It lasted, I think, about 6 weeks. And when it was done, Admiral Byrd, who was in operational control of Operation High Jump, said that the next time that we have to, that the United States has to, the next time the world has to go to war, it may be against a force using flying machines capable of traveling from pole to pole at indescribable speeds. He said that, and then, of course, they persuaded him to shut up. And he never did any press conferences after that one. But that was quoted in a newspaper. He gave that in, that statement in a press conference, and that was quoted in the newspaper. So, is it true? Are the Nazis in Antarctica? Do they have a base there? Do they have updated, perfected flying discs? Well, it's a mystery, but we have seen tonight, just with a little bit of information that I have provided here tonight, we have seen physical evidence that we only just now are beginning to deploy technology the Nazis were ready to deploy at the end of World War II. We're seeing that, you know, with this Horton 229, it looks, it's almost identical. It looks almost identical to our B-2 stealth bomber. And we're seeing with this, and with the fact that the United States military has had one of these locked away in a secret facility for over 50 years, what we're seeing is that it is entirely possible that those rumors about the Nazis and about Antarctica might be true. I want to state very clearly that I'm not saying they're true, and I'm not saying I believe they're true. I'm saying we ought to see that there is a very distinct, very real possibility that those rumors may be true. NASA was primarily built by Nazi scientists. Now, there are people who would come to the conclusion that's not true, because there were more non-Nazi scientists than there were Nazi scientists. Look at the positions that the Nazis held at NASA. Look at the programs they directed, the rockets they built, and where it took us. There are people who want, with all their heart, not to buy the idea that NASA was pretty much constructed by Nazis. But it was. It's a matter of historical fact. It's a matter of historical record. That doesn't mean that NASA itself is Nazi. But the Nazis didn't go out of business. We'll be back right after this. Unbeknownst to most of our audience, there was a technical problem with the feed that goes to our affiliate stations. And it is something that while I've been talking to you, I've been working on trying to get it corrected. It is now corrected, and so my apologies to our affiliate stations and to those of you who listen via the affiliate stations, but we're glad you're with us now. All right. One more consideration here about the Nazis and the possibility that they actually developed functional flying discs. We've already seen with the Horton, and that's H-O-R-T-E-N, 2-29, the Horton 229, we've already seen with that, developed by the Nazis. It is a design that is so futuristic that nobody was able to build and fly one of those things until the B-2 came out. And so we've seen that we had one in our possession. we now know, because of the report that the New York Times is telling us about from the United States Department of Justice, a 600-page report detailing the CIA's activities in sheltering Nazis. We know that because of that report that, in fact, the Nazis didn't go out of business. They were out of business in Germany, and they're out of business in Germany today. They're the most anti-Nazi people you'll meet on this planet are today's Germans. And so they're out of business there. But we see that the Nazis survived World War II. Where did they go? What did they do? What did they become? And we know for sure that at least some of them became high-ranking individuals at NASA, scientists. And the others went to work at other top secret high technology projects around the country. We know that for sure. And as I said, then that begs the question, did they actually build these flying discs and were they functional? There are reports that indeed they were functional because there were people in the UK that saw one fly over the Thames. There were people in New York that saw one fly over New York, and the New York Times published a story about it with a photograph. So it would seem that yes, they did build these and they were functional. It would seem so. What happened to them? Where did they go? And there's yet another question. All of these Nazis that were taken in and sheltered in this CIA program, where did they go? Where are they today? Now, most of them, admittedly, are dead because of their age. Some are still alive, but most of them are dead. They have children, many of them, grandchildren, many of them. And the question is, to what extent were they indoctrinated by their parents who were Nazis? Now, I don't suggest, believe me, folks, I do not suggest anything like the dark days of McCarthyism here in the United States. But what I do suggest is that we need to have our minds open to the possibility that some of the high-ranking individuals in business, industry, maybe even in government, are from this sheltered Nazi program. That is a possibility. And that means it's a possibility that, we certainly are seeing many of Hitler's 25 points being implemented right here in the USA. That we are seeing. If you doubt that, look up Hitler's 25 points on the internet and read them for yourself. We are beginning to see some of that being implemented. And that upsets people, and sometimes, you know, they want to cough and sneeze and spit and vomit all over me because I say it, but read it for yourself. You can read Hitler's 25 points, read them for yourself, and just look around. But it's also possible, isn't it, since we had this Horton 229 secretly tucked away, and it was the concept for the B-2, it's also possible, underscore the word possible, it's possible, isn't it, that these functional flying discs that the Nazis apparently developed using anti-gravity, it is possible that maybe we've got one of those tucked away somewhere. And that just as the B-2 was developed in secrecy, and nobody knew about it. Nobody knew it. You know, it was a surprise when it was unleashed and deployed. It is just possible that anti-gravity aircraft may have been developed from the Nazi example, perhaps by Nazi scientists working right here in secret in the United States. It is possible. That means that many of the flying discs that have been seen, and perhaps other types of exotic aircraft, may be, in fact, ours. Now, does that mean that there's no such thing as unidentified flying objects? No, of course it doesn't. Does it mean there's no such thing as craft coming here that are piloted by off-world beings? In other words, extraterrestrials. No, it doesn't mean that's impossible or that it's untrue. I think there's ample evidence that it is possible and that it has happened and may be happening with more frequency. But let us keep in mind that Hitler was a man. His scientists were humans. And they developed some excessively forward-thinking, forward-leaning, progressive, high-technology aircraft. In World War II, this is in the 1940s. More than 50 years ago. And they're humans. And they developed these very, very futuristic aircraft. That being the case, using that as something to stand on, sort of like standing on their shoulders, the scientists today would have been able, or should have been able, to build something even much further into the future. Something much more futuristic. And so, you know, I think it's going to be pretty amazing when we begin to see some of these aircraft that have been developed that are actually way, way beyond the jets and way beyond having to have wings and way beyond the normal propulsion systems that we think of today. It's going to be very, very interesting when we see some of those beginning to be deployed. And I'm not so sure it'll be that much longer. We're going to take a break in just a moment, and when we come back, I'm going to open up the telephone lines. I'd like to know what you think about this. Maybe you would like to talk about something else. It is going to be BYOT, bring your own topic. So if you don't want to talk about the Nazi aircraft and the fact that we can absolutely prove that some of their technology has been improved upon and moved into present-day use, you don't want to talk about that. Or perhaps the possibility that there may be an Antarctic base, Nazi base, then we'll talk about what you want to talk about, whatever it may be, as long as it's within our zone. I look forward to hearing from you, and we'll open the phones when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and the telephone lines are now open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. That number will work from anywhere on planet Earth. 623-444-5889. Toll free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. The flash message feature, I realized just before showtime, is not on the website. I apologize for that. It will be back up on the website tomorrow. The reason we went through a couple of shows where nobody called. And I respond to that, you know, if you don't want to call, that's fine. We won't open the phone lines. And that's not revenge. It's just, you know, I want you to have what you want. And so we took that off of the website because we weren't opening the phone lines, so we weren't opening the flash line. But I will have that back up there tomorrow, and we will... be glad to accept your flash message. Now, some of you have stored the link to the flash message page, and if you have, please feel free, if you are outside the USA and you're outside of Canada, to go ahead and use that and send me a flash message. I'll be more than happy to read that on the air, and we will we'll discuss your comment or your question. So it's BYOT night. Bring your own topic. We, as I said, we can talk about the Nazi technology that I've been talking about, or we can talk about what's on your mind, all right? Yeah, that's the beauty of BYOT, bring your own topic. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Richard from Florida.
Hello, Richard. How are you doing?
Gosh, I didn't think I'd get through to you that fast. I dialed the number one time and got right through. I want to say bravo. I think you hit upon the topic of topics. I've read all of Farrell's books from the beginning to the end. And I hope he's not finished yet. I've never read anybody who was so knowledgeable about the whole UFO thing. Go ahead.
So do you think that the Nazis actually did build the flying discs and that they escaped to Antarctica?
In my thinking, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Not only Antarctica, but Argentina. Juan Perón was an admirer of the Nazis. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yes, and there are still some Nazi compounds there.
Yes, that's true. One thing I'd like to bring to your attention and your listeners is that you say that these Nazi scientists developed this technology to propel flying discs. But actually, it's something that they rediscovered. If you read Joseph Farrell, he goes into ancient history, and he talks about the flying machines that the Indians talked about that came from their ancient history. Joseph Goebbels was into the occult. He was a SS man.
Yeah.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
I don't mean to ramble on, so just tell me if I...
Yeah, I will. Go ahead.
But they've discovered a physics much like alchemy. They were more alchemists, those German scientists, than they were conventional scientists, and they went in and read those ancient manuscripts and found out about these propellants, which involved mercury, some kind of it stirred up with a vortex that would create tremendous power, and so they built this facility over in Poland, where they followed these manuscripts and experimented, And this place is there today. It's in Poland. People go and visit it. And it looks like kind of a water tower, but it was something that they used to tie down their flying saucers, which, by the way, was not so much Horton 229, but what they called the Bell.
Yeah.
The Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow me?
Yeah, the Bell was in two pieces that rotated opposite each other with some kind of a mercury-like fluid between them.
They considered this a war ending, a weapon of mass destruction. This physics that they found out about from these ancient people that even involves the pyramid, Cheops, as a weapon, as a kind of a interstellar weapon of mass destruction. And so this whole thing is so complex and so huge that it involves history, it involves this, like you say, the Bell, one of which may have crashed in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, after the war.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, because they describe the description of what they saw in Kecksburg does match the description of the Bell.
You're right. Okay.
Yeah, they said it was kind of an acorn shape.
I thought maybe you were unaware of all this, but you see, I've read Farrell.
Well, it sounds to me like that you're pretty much up on this, but let me ask you a question before I move on.
Okay.
I had asked you if you thought they escaped to Antarctica. So let me ask you this. Do you think, since you think that they did escape to Antarctica, do you think their base in Antarctica is functional today?
It's possible, but I say it's a possibility, but I don't find, in my research, I don't find anything that would indicate that's the case.
All right. Well, Richard from Florida, I want to thank you for calling. Is this your first time to call us?
Yeah, okay. How am I doing?
You're doing fine, but when you call us for the very first time, you get some applause. So there you go. Richard, thanks for the call. I have to move on. Excellent call. Excellent, excellent information. And let me say to other first-time callers out there, people who have never called us before, Richard should be your inspiration. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, and the toll-free number is 888-223-4599. Well, this whole thing of, you know, a Nazi base being in Antarctica and functional today, you know, it makes for really, really good sci-fi stuff. But like Richard, I have to say I am not aware of information. I have not run across information that would seem to indicate that there is a functioning Nazi base in Antarctica today. Now, there may be, but I haven't seen anything that would indicate that. Here on this show, however, I have shown you film clips. For those who are watching the show, I've shown you film clips that they were shot during Operation High Jump. They were shot with 16mm camera. And the interesting thing about it is that they found an area that was some 300 square kilometers that had no ice, no snow, and many, many, many liquid water lakes, meaning, of course, the temperature was above freezing. And this group from Operation High Jump that flew over that and filmed it actually landed their plane on one of those lakes. It was about 5 miles long. and took water samples and so forth, and it was fresh water. It was not salt water. It was fresh water. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
I've heard that Hitler actually had some American backers financially.
He did.
Among those backers was Prescott Bush and a few other high-powered money brokers.
Henry Ford was one.
Yeah. And I think Rockefeller might have been one.
I'm not sure, but I think that's correct.
Now, who was the head of the CIA in the 1940s?
Well, I don't know. I think the first head of the CIA, wasn't it Forrestal?
It might have been. I don't know. What
yeah.
I'm wondering is...
And then after that was Dulles, I think.
Yeah. But what I'm wondering is, were the Nazis brought over here bought and paid for by Hitler's backers?
No, these guys that were head of the CIA, no, they were born here.
No, I mean the Nazis that were brought over here.
Yeah, what about them?
Was the CIA essentially paid to bring them over here?
Oh well, I don't know. I guess we could get our hands on that 600-page report and read it. What that report is, it's an investigative report. It's a report on the investigation that the Department of Justice did into the CIA's activities relative to these Nazis. And it's just the report is 600 pages. So maybe there might be some indication of that in there. Let me put it this way. Why do you think that would be an important question?
I don't think it's an important question, but I'm just wondering who brought them over here and why. Who financed it?
Well, American taxpayers.
Yeah.
So your parents and mine paid for that.
Yeah. Now here's another thought for you.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of sheep dipping someone.
Yeah.
That was probably where they got their practice. They had to sheep dip those people, so they did not exist as Nazis before they were released into the American population.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, for whatever reason, if we could go back and ask these guys in the CIA, why in God's name did you do this? They would probably give us some really good answers, okay? I mean, they've rationalized it out. They would have some good answers. At least answers they think are good. But the thing is, you know, when you play with poison and you do it often enough, sooner or later you're going to succumb to the poison. You're going to spill it on your skin. You're going to get it into your bloodstream some way. You're going to succumb to the poison. And I think there is pretty good evidence that some of these Nazi ideas made it into the bloodstream here.
Oh, yeah. I have a slight problem with some of the stuff that's put in as additives to our food, because we really don't know what they do.
Well, I'll tell you one thing they're doing. They're changing the genetic code. Average age... When I was growing up, the average age at which girls generally hit puberty would be 12, 13 years old. It's now 9.
Yeah.
Okay, here in the United States. Now, if that is not evidence of DNA being changed, being altered, whether on purpose or accidentally, I don't know what would be evidence of it. It is evidence of it. DNA has been altered here. And it's not healthy. And it's, you know, the stuff that they put into the food is, in my opinion, killing us.
Yep. I agree. And then you wonder where the other aspect of that is, where does all the GM food, genetically modified food, come from?
I don't know, but I know they tried to slip some of it into some shipments to China, and China caught it and refused the shipments.
Good for them.
Yeah. They turned them back, said, nothing done. That's not what we're paying for, and you can't bring that in here. So.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call, Brent.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. 623-444-5889. It is BYOT night. We will talk about whatever's on your mind within our genre. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan at Puget Sound.
Hi, Ryan.
How you doing tonight?
Doing well. Good to hear from you.
Hey, here's a topic for you. Have you tested out the new body scanners yet at the airport?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was subjected to that. I get the full tilt boogie, Ryan. You know, never mind the fact that I did, you know, 13 missions in war zones for this country. Never mind the fact that I love this country and I salute the flag. I get the full tilt boogie when I go through out at the airport. And that's after they did this full body x-ray or full body scan, that's when they asked me, Mr. Smith, are you wearing briefs or boxers?
Well, you know, now you were talking earlier about this document that they had to ask them to release about this Nazi thing. It's hard to get that, but if you look on the internet, you can easily get pictures of people that, not that I'd want to look at them, but these full body scanners that, you know, that you might want to keep your pictures on the internet somewhere, not that anybody want to look at it. But.
Yeah, well, I don't care.
Yeah.
Listen, I am so unashamed and so unflappable. If I go through and get asked that again, I think I'm going to say, you know, I really can't remember if I'm wearing boxers or briefs. Let's see.
Yeah. But now these new scanners, though, apparently we still have Nazis in America today.
How so?
It sure seems like it.
Yeah, well, give us an example.
Well, these have you been following this story about these new X-ray machines that they have in the airports?
Oh, yeah.
Pictures that are being leaked to the internet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me tell you, the former head of the TSA was on television yesterday talking about all of this. I can't remember his name, but they were the interviewer was giving him a pretty tough time, and the guy actually said this. He actually said this on national television. He said, well, you know, as Americans, none of us like going through a situation like that where, you know, our Fourth Amendment rights are violated, but unfortunately, that's the way it's going to have to be. Oh, contraire, Mr. Former TSA, we own this country, and you people work for us. And by God, if enough of us stand up and say no, guess what it's going to be? It's going to be no. Because, no, we don't have to have our Fourth Amendment rights trampled on in order for them to do what their little bitty something they think is security. Our Fourth Amendment rights do not have to be trampled on for that to happen. And so, no, I don't think we have to put up with it.
I've never seen anything this bad before. I never thought it could get this bad to where that your privacy would be violated this bad. But anyways,
it's going to get a lot worse.
The Gulf disaster is still going on. I read that John Hutchinson went down there to test some of his new technology to see if he could figure out a way to separate the oil from the water, and the Coast Guard ran him off.
Yeah,
told him to get out of there, and so he got chased off by the Coast Guard. They're cleaning up the tar balls on the beach with little shovels. But what about all the oil that's resting on the bottom of the Gulf that is coating the floor of the Gulf? Nobody seems to want to clean that up.
Look, there is an evil, evil, evil orchestration. I'm not going to say it's a conspiracy. It is very well orchestrated, and it's worldwide. And that oil spill is part of that.
Well, I used to be a pretty skeptic on that. When people tell me that, I would say, "Yeah, right. Yeah, sure."
Mm-hmm, me too.
I'm starting to become more of a believer, convinced that there might be something to this whole idea that they're trying to form a new world government. These G20 meetings with these world power elites and these Bilderberg meetings and stuff. I used to be skeptic, but I'm starting to think maybe there's something to all this, because you look at all the financiers between these candidates that run for president. It doesn't matter, Democrat or Republican. The people that fund them, that's what you got to look at, where the money's coming from. You know what I mean?
That's right. Absolutely so true.
I used to be closed-minded about that, but I'm starting to see, after seeing all these different things happen, just one thing after another of violations like this, that I'm starting to believe there's something to all that business.
Oh, there really, really is. There really is, yes. All right, Ryan, thanks for the call. Interesting observations, interesting comments. 623-444-5889. I've said it on this show that you can step on the throats of the American population only for so long. And when Americans have had enough, they'll come up swinging. They'll come up fighting. And this thing with the scanners and the gropes, that's pretty much done it. People are up, and they're saying no. I read today, now I haven't seen the poll, but I read there's a Reuters poll that's out that says, as a result of these scanners and gropes, 96% of America says they will not fly. Good going, America. Let's take it to 100%. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. It is BYOT night. It's Bring Your Own Topic, BYOT. The telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. Now, if you don't want to discuss, topic, the story that I brought, then we'll talk about whatever's on your mind, all right? So you just call those numbers, and we'll talk about what's on your mind. This whole thing with the scanners, the interesting thing about the scanners it is in our genre, because we talk about futuristic science. And I've talked to you many, many times about the collision between technology and our values. Just because we have the capability of doing something doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. And these scanners are an absolute example of futuristic technology colliding with our values. Now, for those of you who don't know what the scanners do, it's not really X-ray. Well, it is, but I mean, it doesn't look inside your body. It looks at your body. It's focused on your skin. There's a group of scientists that have come out, which, by the way, that means they see you naked standing there. Absolutely, truly naked standing there. Okay, now, a group of scientists have come out with a report that says that because it's focused on the skin, the actual effect of it is about 20 times greater than what they're telling us. And that it's skin's very, very sensitive to this sort of thing, and that they suspect that this could really increase the cancer rate. One of the things that I heard one interviewer ask the current director of TSA was a good question. The interviewer said, well, what's next? I mean, full, body cavity searches? Is that next? The guy danced around that. He never said yes, and he never said no. Is it worth it to you to give up your freedom and your privacy to this technology? Now, they say, well, we have to do that in order to protect you. Nah, you don't have to do it. Is there any other country doing it? No. Are there other countries refusing to do it? Yes, bunches. Canada, for one, is refusing. The scanners are not going there. Europe, the European Union, is taking up the discussion on outlawing that in the European Union, which would mean, see, when you get on a U.S. flight, you get on a flight headed to the United States, and you get on it anywhere in Europe, you have to be subjected to the U.S. security measures. And that means you have to go through that scanner or you get the pat-down. It's not a pat-down. It's a grab and grope. Okay? Now, when I was a police officer, that's the kind of so-called pat-down that you do when you arrest someone and you're booking them into the jail. Then, yes, you do that kind of a pat-down because you are risking a whole lot right there. You're putting them into an environment with other people who, like them, have broken the law, and they are under arrest. So what's happening here in the United States and what's happening in Europe when you get on an American flight is you're being subjected to what we subject felons to. You are being treated as though you were under arrest. And this is an example of futuristic science in collision with our values. Other technology, and we would do well to think about this, other technology is out there that's far, far, far ahead of this technology in, other fields. This technology doesn't show them if you are hiding a bomb in a body cavity. It doesn't do that. Basically, it doesn't do anything except it shows you naked. But there's technology out there in other fields that is, it's very futuristic technology that we're going to have collisions with. Now, one of the things that may come up, for instance, people say, okay, that's it. We're not going to fly. We just won't fly. We'll take a bus, we'll take a train, we'll drive, but we won't fly. And so then the airlines start losing even more money than they're already losing. And they start screaming to Washington, and Washington says, okay, we've come up with something else. I'll tell you what we're going to do. If you are a frequent flyer, you can apply to have a background check. They've already got something similar to this. You can apply to have a background check. And once we clear you in this background check, you can get a chip. And then as you approach the the security area, the chip will be automatically read and it'll clear you to go on through. And the danger is that there will be a lot of people who say, oh, okay, well, see, now I can live with that because you're not looking at me naked. Okay, but now with this chip, they're able to track every move you make and eventually every purchase you make. Every time you spend money, where you spend it, what you spend it on, they can, by tracking your chip, they can also track, they can see all the other people with chips that are around you. So there you are in your home, and they can identify who you've got in your home. It's even a more invasive practice, more invasion of privacy than the scanner. So technology, futuristic technology is out there, and way, way in advance of what you think it is. And it is more invasive. It tends toward less and less and less and less and less freedom. In fact, it tends towards totalitarianism, the likes of which George Orwell never envisioned. What he envisioned in his book 1984 was a totalitarian state, and it was really bad. But this technology will make it even worse. And so sometimes when I hear people say, well, you know, if we could just release all of the ET technology that's that we have, it would be a utopia here on Earth. It wouldn't be, because regardless of the level of technology, when that technology is in the hands of despots, when it's in the hands of people who are power hungry and control crazy, they'll use it. Whether you're talking about a flint arrowhead, or if you're talking about a laser space weapon that's on a space platform orbiting above the Earth, regardless of what level of technology you're talking about, any level of technology in the hands of a control freak tends toward totalitarianism and less freedom. And so when we talk about the futuristic science, and you know, we talk about advanced propulsion systems and free energy and things like that, just remember that as long as these folks that are in power are allowed to stay in power, they will use the technology to bolster their power and increase their power. And regardless of what the technology is. And so the human factor, as we interface with technology, the human factor has a lot of dynamics in it. Everything that could be used for tremendous benefit and something good for the human race as a whole can also be used to enslave the human race. Think about that. Now, is that a reason that we should shy away from technology? No, it's not. But it certainly is a reason that all of us should be alive, aware, awake, alert, and active in shaping the way this technology is used in our society. And this is something Dr. Nick Begich has talked about for many, many years. And this is something that he's talked about right here on this show. Dr. Begich has talked about and given examples, shown examples of futuristic technology, and has shown us documentation and examples of how that technology is going to be used, in some cases already being used. And one of the things that he's always talked with us about is how important it is for all of us to be alert, awake, aware, and active in forcing debate and discussion on how these technologies are to be used. Some technologies should not be used at all. There was a time when the most amazing thing in the world was called a fluoroscope. And the fluoroscope was kind of an early X-ray machine. You walk behind the fluoroscope, and then there's a screen in front of you, and people then on the other side of that screen looking at you could see your skeleton. They could see all your bones and everything. It was kind of an early X-ray machine. Nobody knew, because you didn't feel anything, of course, when you walked up there. It didn't burn. It didn't sting. It didn't hurt you physically that you knew. But there were people that thought it was so cool, you know, and these were attractions. People went around the country with fluoroscopes, appearing at state fairs and county fairs and things like that, and you pay your nickel and then you could get in the fluoroscope and your family could see your bones. You know, it was weird, but still, it was an attraction. A lot of people thought it was so cool. They did it several times, and they were there for several minutes. You know, an X-ray film is like zap and it's done. They were there. They would stand there, you know, for a couple of minutes. Well, they were getting exposed, of course, to X-rays. They were getting a lot of X-ray. And so a lot of people got sick and died as a result of this. It created cancers and a lot of other problems. And so the fluoroscope, of course, is no longer in use. But that is technology. That's a case where the technology was harmful to us. So there are some of these technologies, futuristic technologies, that are harmful to us. And of course, the fluoroscope led to the development of the modern X-ray machine, and now they don't even have to use X-rays. But the point is, that's a case where technology was, everybody thought it was so cool. Yeah, but it killed some people, quite a number of people. Well, the same thing is going to be true when we start seeing this ET technology being deployed for the use of the public. We're going to see some of it that's very beneficial and some of it very dangerous. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. It is open line live tonight. That's BYOT, bring your own topic. We'll talk about what's on your mind. We have time for one or two calls. 623-444-5889 is the number. Or toll free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. I have a flash message from, I don't know if it's Deme, D-E-M-E. And this is from Belgium. The question is, I ran, for those who are listening on radio, on our TV channel during one of the breaks, we ran a couple of ads that talk about, you know, thank you for your donation. We need your support. And Demi wants to know why I mentioned that, why I put those ads in there. Well, let me give you a real quick example. Each day, there are a few members whose membership comes due that day. People join at different times, and so every day there are a few whose membership comes due that day, and their card is charged. Well, with the economic downturn, let me give you an example of today. We have one cancellation today due to job loss. I got an email about it. Then we had five whose memberships, and some of those are monthly, $6.95. Some of those are quarterly, $19.80. We had five others that came due today. Two of those went through. Three of those failed. So we're operating. That's a total of six memberships that would have been due today, and we have two that went through. So it's pretty urgent. I mean, it's pretty dire. And, that's why we run those. Because if we can't pay the bills, we can't be here. That's why we do it. And you notice, I don't run commercials for businesses. And the reason that I don't run commercials for businesses is we tried that, and that didn't work very well. And it is member-supported, public radio or public television. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Kevin. I was thinking about your, the people that call in and stuff seem to be kind of like the same people most of the time, 90% of them anyway. Is there a way to run a promotion, say, like... This is just a suggestion. If a person calls in, let's say, three times in 1 week, they get 10% off of the price of joining or something of such nature, to try to work on.
I'll tell you something. Rusty, I truly appreciate where you're coming from. We had a first-time caller tonight, Richard from Florida. I have inside of me something very opposed to bribing people to call, bribing people to express themselves. We're paying for phone lines. We'll even pay for the phone call. We're paying for two computer systems and camera systems and software and video clips and electricity, and we're doing all of that and producing the top show in its genre on this planet. And if somebody doesn't want to call, no matter what you bribe them with, they're not going to call. I invite people to call, and I invite first-time callers, and the lines are open. And, if people want to call, they will. And if they don't, they won't. But I really have an aversion to bribing people to step up and exercise their freedom of speech. If they don't want to exercise their freedom of speech, then they can enjoy silence when that freedom is gone.
Well, I understand. But, I've noticed that of all the million listeners, 90% of the people that call in are people like me who are the same people most of the time. But I'm looking for, I'm just going to pick a country, not picking on a country, but let's say China.
Okay.
I know there's people that are listening there, or Korea, whatever. How can we get those people to call in?
Very difficult, because it's very expensive for them.
Okay.
Very expensive for them to make an international long-distance call.
Oh, how about your flash thing, though, that you use?
Yes, and we do get flash messages. I just read one from Belgium.
Yes.
I wish that the phone lines were jammed up all the time. I wish they were. Sometimes they are. and sometimes they're not. But you know, it's not always the same people that call in. However, it does kind of come in bunches. And you know, we went through a period of time where there was a guy that called in every night, and he usually was the first caller, and his name was Michelle from Canada. Michelle always had something really good to say, and his ideas, his comments were always really, really good. I got email from people, Rusty, complaining that it's always Michelle as the first caller. And then one day Michelle died. And people were calling the show and crying on the air because they miss Michelle. So, you know, there's no predicting what people are going to think or how they're going to respond. But what we do is give people the opportunity. And, you know, if they're not smart enough or bold enough to be free, they deserve the slavery that's coming.
Well, I agree with that, you know, but how about, like, giving away a mug to the third caller, or have you tried something like that?
Where would I get the money for that?
Well, it would seem like it'd be kind of like advertising, you know, it would kind of pay for itself, you know?
And nothing pays for itself. Nothing pays for itself. Rusty, when you've heard me say that I live on between $2 and $5 a day, that's not a joke. When this show is over tonight, I will sleep on the floor in the studio. Where will the money come from me to give mugs away?
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of things to help the show, that's all.
Yeah. Well, what will help the show is money. When we have enough financial support to pay our bills without sweating it day after day after day, then we can do some of that kind of stuff. This is the number one show in its genre, but because it's listener supported, there are people who cannot afford, really cannot afford, to pay 23 cents a day. But that's not most of them. Most refuse to pay 23 cents a day to be members and to get all the extra goodies that go with it. They just have something in them that says, ain't doing it. And they don't do it. So when they don't, then all the bills have to get paid somehow. And that means I sleep on the floor. That means I live on $2 to $5 a day. Hey, thanks for the call. The end of the show has arrived. All right, ladies and gentlemen. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.